present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting scene in the Independent TV listings, read by Charlotte Green.
5:10, The Weakest Link, Queen's Speech Response by the Liberal Democrats.
Thanks to Elizabeth Owen from Oxford for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Francis Ween. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Andy, why is it no longer the students that are revolting?
This story is about giving something back to society because, you know, is it right, frankly, that there are people who receive public money for several years to do, frankly, not what they're supposed to do, but to just lark around with their mates and generally have a good time, all at the taxpayers' expense? And, of course, the people I'm talking about are prime ministers. A prime minister should be asked to pay back the money that we paid him as prime minister, you know, once he leaves number 10 and gets a proper job. This is the argument that's being used at the moment in relation to student tuition fees. And they did some research and they discovered that apparently there are still a significant number of students leaving further education somehow still with a vestige of optimism and hope about their lives. And the government feels that that's unacceptable. It wants to saddle them with as much debt as possible and make them nice, passive, cooperative citizens. And it's got the government into a lot of trouble because the Labour backbenchers don't seem so scared of Tony Blair anymore. In fact, there's a definite element of, come on then, if you think you're hard enough. And
well, it basically is the top-up fee. It's sort of a cover charge to keep out the riffraff. And as such, it's a start. But I think if they instituted, say, a dress code, I think that could help a bit more. You know, you're wearing trainers, you're not getting in to study sociology. Sorry.
I still don't think Tony Blair understands how taxation works. Because one of the things he said was that it was unfair to expect people who haven't gone through further education to contribute to the costs of other people's further education. But, you know, that's not how taxes work. You know, I mean, I pay taxes. Some of it goes towards the army, but I don't get to attack Baghdad. I don't know if Gordon sat him down and explained it all to him. Do you think Gordon glazes over when Tony starts talking about Tesla? He doesn't bloody understand it. Here he goes.
I think it's more of Gordon's control freakery. Only he can understand how the numbers work.
Yeah.
It's just his inability to delegate, which will eventually lead to his death.
Tony Blair has defended plans for student top-up fees in the House of Commons. Education Secretary Charles Clarke said introducing variable fees was the fairest way forward. Indeed, much fairer than Blair's original plan to introduce gladiatorial fights between middle-class and working-class sixth formers. The latter being only allowed to defend themselves with a bag of cold chips or a whippet. Francis, who could soon be saying, I'm on the train, if they keep using their mobiles.
Oh yes, a new law came in this week, banning people from using their mobile phones while they're driving a car. Which you think fairly easy to understand this law, but the Daily Telegraph obviously thought its readers might struggle to grasp this. So it had about a page by its motoring correspondent, a little Q&A format, saying, what does this mean? It means that if you've got your mobile phone beside your own and you're chatting while driving a car, you'll be fined. So I can't hold a mobile phone while I'm driving my car. That's what I said. And it went on like this paragraph. So does this mean I can use my laptop while I'm driving my car? to which the Telegraph Matron correspondent said, no, the new law covers that as well. But then towards the end of this incredible thing, he said, however, you can still use pocket calculators while you're driving. I always find it's awfully useful. The gist of this chap's expert advice over the whole page was that anything that distracts a driver is illegal.
Might be a good game, though, to tease the police if you pull up next to the traffic lights and take out a saxophone. There's a little state of grace, isn't there, in England? We've got a few months to get used to it, but they're enforcing it immediately in Scotland, which means that the poor people of Berwick have been inundated with Scots drivers coming, driving across the border to make their phone calls.
From Monday this week, motorists using mobile phones while driving face on-the-spot fines of £30. Talking on the phone can be highly dangerous, especially if you're in a shark-infested pool and are wearing a wetsuit made out of fish guts. Linda, whose bravado in Iraq may be just brouhaha?
This is the ambush in Iraq of an American convoy carrying lots of non-Saddam Hussein banknotes for Iraq, which, according to the Americans, was ambushed by hundreds and hundreds of guerrilla fighters who were killed, and at least five of them were Saddam Hussein, and another three were Osama bin Laden, I think. But anyway, it was this glorious victory. On the other hand, the Iraqis say that actually, no, there were about, I don't know, 12 people killed, and most of them were civilians. So, I don't know. I suppose in a funny way, they're both right. The worry is that Bush is going to think, oh, this was rubbish. It's all going wrong and we're all getting killed. I know, let's just start another one. This one doesn't count. New one. I had my fingers crossed during that one. I think if we just gave the man an atlas and said to him, look, anything you can spell, you can attack. We'd be safe, wouldn't we? But Ostromania would be bricking it.
US accounts of a great victory against rebel forces in the Iraqi town of Samarra turned out to be somewhat exaggerated after reporters spoke to local bystanders. The US Army is standing by its claim that it fought off an ambush by hundreds of fedayeen using only a cannon fashioned from spoons, said Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Archer. 2 points to Linda. Alan, listen to this. Money's Too Tight by Simply Red. Which
see, that took Alan right back to his Saturday Night Fever days. Yeah. I've always thought, Alan, you can tell by the way he uses his walk, he's a woman's man. He's no time to talk.
those references I ought to have got. Was that a footnote in my life? Simon, you were about to say something.
I was about to ask you, which shadowy figure has cut back on future tax cuts?
Oh, it's not about the German cannibal, then. This is about the Shadow Chancellor Oliver Letwin packing up his various jobs and retainers in the city in order to become a great new Chancellor of Exchequer as soon as Michael gets in. I was a bit disturbed with Michael and the grammar school quip with Blair, though. You know, don't any public school boy tell this grammar school boy about privilege. You see that exchange in the comments.
I
thought,
yes, was it?
I went to a grammar school, and they were indistinguishable from public schools. We wore gowns, we had prefects, we got caned every day, and the, you know, there was buggery about if you knew where to look for it.
Was it actually on the curriculum?
It wasn't actually compulsory. I mean, I opted for extra geography because it didn't make you sore. So that one's about Oliver Letwin, the other one. I mean, the other bloke. The next Shadow Chancellor. I mean, the next Chancellor.
Oh, it's the Shadow Cabinet. The other bloke has to be specific enough, surely.
They've got tiny little cabinet now. There's only about six of them. There's just him, Michael Howard, a couple of others, just enough to get on a Variety Club of Great Britain sunshine bus.
But his salary from Rothschild was about £300,000 a year, this thing he's giving up.
That's right.
And he said, but of course it will be a minor inconvenience. But he wasn't that bothered because he said he wasn't that interested in money. It's rather odd for a Shadow Chancellor.
That would be brilliant, though, wouldn't it, if he ever becomes Chancellor and he makes the budget speech. He says, well, that's only money. You know, can't buy happiness, can it? I think that'd be fantastic.
Shadow Chancellor Oliver Letwin said the Conservative government under Michael Howard wouldn't introduce tax cuts for several years. How else will they be able to afford that special island where all the asylum seekers will be living? We start round two with an advert seen in a newsagent's window.
PowerTech F45 electric wheelchair for sale. Still under guarantee. First owner died in excellent condition.
Thanks to Ian Ford for sending that in. Andy, can you answer this question, or do I need to ask a dolphin?
This is a scientific study. It basically said that because monkeys and dolphins have the ability to not make their mind up about something, that this is a sign of extreme intelligence. because you have to be bright to realise that you don't know something.
Do you think monkeys at the zoo are sitting there thinking, shall I wave my genitals at the public? Yes, I think I will.
No, but the really bright monkeys say, shall I wave my genitals at the public? Shall I not wave my genitals at the public? Do you know, I really can't decide. And that's the clever monkey. That's the one who will probably become the leader of the monkey tribe and have all the best brides. My knowledge of the monkey world is a bit limited.
So how do they know this with monkeys then? Is it a little look in their eye or something? What is it?
They give them a couple of options. I think they probably gave them things like, you know, do you want to have that nut there or that nut over there? And if the monkey looked torn, you know, then obviously that's a bright monkey who thinks, two nuts, they're both lovely, I'd like both of them, what should I do?
Or, you've read this story, Andy, clearly. I mean, how do you spot an indecisive dolphin? tell me what a dolphin has to choose between.
Well, presumably they gave them dolphin-like things that they do in the wild, like...
What I want to know, Andy, is whether the scientists have actually made their mind up on this one. Because if they haven't, they're intelligent.
That's right.
And if they have, they're stupid, and they shouldn't have.
Dolphins are definitely clever, because I once bought a CD of whale song, and it turned out to be a tribute band of dolphins.
Scientists in America have proved conclusively that animals are much smarter than we realised. Humans, rhesus monkeys and bottlenose dolphins were given non-verbal tasks to perform. Bottlenose dolphins get their name because they've always got their nose stuck in a bottle. Booknose dolphins are keen on reading, and Flipper was the Gulf of Mexico underwater pinball champion for 3 years in a row. Francis, why are the Home Secretary's latest comments a case of trial and error?
David Plunkett.
That's right.
He's taken a break from beating up Asylum Seekers this week. Did you see? He beat himself up. Turned up with a most enormous black eye and claimed he'd got it from crashing against some banisters or barristers, as the case may be. Something like that. This is probably him yet again trying to abolish trial by jury and habeas corpus and 101 other things.
I'll give you one point for that.
There was a chap he arrested. I don't know how I can say this without repeating his offence. But anyway, there was someone arrested on suspicion of having some connection with Al-Qaeda. Blunkett immediately went on the air and made various remarks about this person. Obviously unaware that we have this curious thing in Britain that you're innocent till tried and found guilty.
The alleged offence, as I understand it, is that this person supposedly was in cahoots with a shoe bomber. And this shoe bomber trend develops. I've got this awful picture of us being forced to wear sandals.
Do you think Clarks will start doing shoe bombs in extra-wide fittings?
And God help us if Al-Qaeda come up with an underpants bomber.
David Blunkett has attempted yet again to do away with trial by jury, this time by effectively declaring a suspect guilty before he's even got to court. Mr. Blunkett defended his remarks as being pretty self-evident, to be honest, said he was just stating the obvious. On which basis it's perfectly okay for us to say that David Blunkett is a... And I don't care who knows it. Linda, listen to this. Why should a sunny outlook, Linda, mean everything's going downhill for skiers?
Ah, yes, global warming and its effect on the skiing industry. Apparently, places like Switzerland, by the middle of the century, so if you've booked ahead to avoid disappointment, that may have been a false move, will be so globally warmed that there won't be any snow for skiing. They'll just be desert-like, and they'll just have to, I don't know, I suppose they'll just have to do something other than skiing, I suppose, because they're not made of Nazi gold, are they? So they'll have to start making fondue westerns.
I'm very glad. I mean, those of us who don't ski will be able to go away at Christmas without those rat bags with planks on their shoulders swinging around at the check-in desk and knocking your hat off. Thousands of them. Why on earth they would want to strap fence posts to their feet and come down the top of a mountain? It's bloody ridiculous. I went, Mont Blanc's got a railway. You know, travel up on the railway and see these fools going down on foot. I don't know why they don't put railways on all of them. Then it wouldn't matter whether it snowed or not. You go up and down in the season. Bit of fake snow at the top, have an ice lolly. It would just...
According to the UN Environment Programme, global warming could leave many winter sports venues facing a snow-free future. The UN team say they expect a rise in global temperatures over the next 50 years of 5 Celsius or more. Or, for those of you used to the old measurements, 6 shillings and fourpence. Alan, who's diagnosed
that... Do people still get fondue sets? People always used to have a fondue set under the sink, didn't they, getting dusted? I suppose you can get digital ones now.
It's always a nightmare.
Alan, which sweet chariot swung low enough to fit under the A1?
It was actually the M62. What's the point where the A1 joins the M62, which, if you're a really boring nerd, you can go on about forever. It's a first century chariot, and it has been discovered in a pit under the M62. Probably if you dug up the M25, you'd find about 35,000 all in a sort of row around one another. But it actually had the bloke in it. I mean, I think he was listening to his mobile at the time the accident occurred. But you've got to put plaster of Paris in to see the chariot, because when I watched it on television, it was just sort of mud, because it was wooden wheels and it's all gone. It's just a couple of hubs and a bone. But they're clever buggers, archaeologists, despite the fact they can't always make their minds up. They looked at the bone and the two hubs and said, that is a chariot with a bloke in it. And he was very important, because only the important ones got buried in chariots. And possibly the caravan. I don't know. It is that part of the M62 where people do tend to break off and go towards Kendal.
As well as being important, they know he was also gullible, don't they? Because they've discovered that the four wheels of the chariot don't match. So he'd obviously been taken in by a dodgy garage.
Archaeologists have discovered the remains of an ancient chariot buried with the remains of an Iron Age chieftain of the Parisii on the planned route of an upgrade to the A1 in West Yorkshire. Some people believe the chariot must have belonged to a married couple due to the strip on the windscreen which reads Ben on the driver's side and her on hers. Before we start the final round, here's an item from the RNID newsletter.
RNID has a number of care homes around the country whose aim is to maximise the quality of life for dead people with additional disabilities.
Thanks to Neville Preston of Darlington for that. Andy, listen to this.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild.
Neil Diamond.
I confess, it's me, I did it. Whatever it was, just stop that music.
Andy, why do shop assistants wish every night was a silent night?
This is a story of Austrian shop workers. Are they bringing legal action or threatening legal action against their employers for incessant Yuletide muzak being played and driving them bonkers? Things got to be pretty bad, I would say, for Austrians to think something is tacky. When you look at Lederhosen and, you know... It's a lovely country, Austria. Have you been there? It's beautiful. The landscape's wasted on the Austrians, but it's lovely.
Is Austria what? Like Switzerland?
There are mountains involved, certainly, and lakes.
But they don't have Toblerone, I suppose, do they? Do you know, have you ever tried to use one of those giant Toblerone as a toast rack? Works once.
Shop assistants in Austria are threatening to sue employers who play too much Christmas music in their stores. Christmas music was invented in 1876 when Slade topped the charts with Ye Merry Christmassy Everybody Ye, seeing off competition from A Christmas Carol by Chas and Dickens. Many of the Christmas traditions which still exist today were introduced into this country by Prince Albert, who was famous for having his Christmas cracker pinned to his baubles. Francis, why can tourists look forward to a hearty bonjour et bienvenue à Birmingham?
Oh, this is lovely. There's a Ferris wheel that's been put in the middle of Birmingham. And it came from France, and I think it was previously on the Champs-Élysées or somewhere like that. and they forgot to change the recorded commentary. So all these Brummies are going slowly round and round on the Ferris wheel, and the voice tells them that they're now looking at the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower and this thing, when in fact, all they can see is Smithwick.
No, that's the Palais de Justice.
Well, it's there's a lobby now not to get it changed because a lot of the customers like it. They go there and they shut their eyes as they go round. And they listen to the commentary. And they can think they're in Paris. And it's a way of getting a very cheap holiday in Paris without having to go there.
You think the French one will have a commentary about Birmingham?
Well, so there's Le Jonction Spaghetti.
Le Palais de Dudley.
This is using a Ferris wheel in Birmingham, being left a little confused by the commentary, which invites them to admire the River Seine and the Eiffel Tower. One shouldn't be too hard on Brum. Many good things have come out of the city. The M5, the M6. Linda, why should you be pleased as punch that people are piping up for potty parity?
This is about ladies' loos. In America, there's been a great fuss about the fact that women always have to queue for the loo and men don't. So they're making it law that you have to have more ladies' loos, and this is sort of going to catch on over here. There are far too few ladies' loos, and you think, oh, I'll nip into the gents, but then the smell of the gents. What on earth do men do in gents' toilets to make them stink? If all the wee from the entire history of the world were gathered together in one place, it wouldn't smell as bad as a gents' toilet. Gents, I mean, what happens there? What makes them smell so bad?
Well, I'm sorry, that's a really... All right, you asked for it, Linda. I'm going to put the man's perspective now. There is more margin of error for men. You see, toilet manufacturers make toilets out of very kind of bouncy porcelain. You know, we try to politely lift the seat, as gentlemen are supposed to do. How many seats stay up during an entire male pee? I'll tell you, only 10%. Halfway through, the lid comes down, splish, splash, splash, catastrophe. Then you've got two options now. Or, if you're highly intelligent, three. There's, you know, cleaning up after you. And there's do a runner. And then there's, I don't know. Just live in the side of man's shoes for a little while, Linda, and I think, you know.
Well, that's... no, I don't think so. I think they'd be a bit damp.
And it's worse if you've got a drink in one hand and a pie in the other.
Or if you fall asleep with your head resting against the wall.
Evolution. I'm looking forward to it.
The Restroom Equality Bill was introduced by New York councillors Yvette Clark and Bill de Blasio. They want architects and builders to supply twice as many lavatories for women as for men. Of course, if you want to see a real example of gender discrimination, you should see the reaction I got last time I walked in here in a skirt. Finally, Alan, who's been rewarded for doing to the English language what he did to Iraq.
It's Donald Rumsfeld, who has been awarded a gong, spelt G-N-O-G, by the Campaign for Pure English, for conceiving the idea of the unknown unknowns. I thought it was really rather good. I mean, all rhetoric is meaningless, and I thought his was rather good. I mean, if you're involved in a situation that has no rational cause, and you can do these speeches, he's rather fine.
I always felt Rumsfeld, I don't know why, but whenever I see it written down, I always think it's one of those abstract German nouns that means sort of existential guilt or something. You know, he's suffering from Rumsfeld, like sort of Weltschmerz and Baden-Baden.
US Defence Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has won the Foot in Mouth Award for mangling the English language. Luckily for him, he didn't win the Foot and Mouth Award, else he'd have been put down by British Army marksmen or turned into a steak and kidney pie. So, before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this has been sent in by Charlotte Hubbard, and it's from the Exeter Express and Echo. And it says, Mr. Wade said he did not know why London insurers Stirling Hamilton Wright had declined to continue to cover this year's event, which involves adults and children running through streets carrying blazing tar barrels on their shoulders.
Francis.
Simon, this is a story from the Times about a thing called Club Wicked in South London, which is applying to the local authority for a licence to be the first nightclub in Britain to allow people to have sex on the premises. Unfortunately, it's right next to Southwark Cathedral, which has written to complain about this to the local authority, and the Southwark letter says that the club and its guests cause moral outrage to the clergy and congregation of the cathedral. Mr. Sheridan, the club's manager, claims that the dean established that this sexual activity was taking place a few yards from his north transept by hiring private detectives who dressed up as the Three Musketeers to slip into the club last New Year's Eve. He said that they were easily spotted, as all the other customers were dressed in rubber.
Linda.
Ah, thanks to Dr. R.G. Richards, who sent in this cutting from the British Medical Journal. The UK government's scheme to create nursing home prisons for its 1,200 geriatric prisoners is not just for people who've languished too long in prison. It's also for elderly people who still get up to mischief. In Withamshire, Manchester, police were hunting for the elderly driver of a purple electric wheelchair after it was involved in a hit-and-run incident. Witnesses were apparently unable to stop his progress, top speed 8 miles an hour, and the wheelchair was eventually found burnt out near a pub.
Alan.
Well, I've got this, Simon, from the Thornton Cleveland Parish Times. It says, at the October meeting of the Christian Union, the Reverend Peter Dalton addressed the topic of reincarnation. There was an encouragingly high turnout, including quite a few new faces.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Andy and Francis have 16 points. Linda and Alan have 17 points. And before we leave you, here's a message seen on a vending machine selling whiskey-flavoured condoms in Edinburgh.
Do not drive whilst using this product.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Francis Wheen, Linda Smith and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Simon Nichols.